Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Lied to by
the government. They were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 142 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 25th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We've got Whitey and Water on the Moon, the G20 Crackdown, the Secret Service, irreversible catastrophe, 10 looming bankruptcies, swine flu updates, FEMA, Afghanistan surge, drones, goats, Z-Big, and the grand chessboard is all here at September 25th, 2009, MediaMonarchy.com.
A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me because Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Was all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon? How come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the moon.
Going way back, Gil Scott Heron, Whitey on the Moon. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 142 of Media Monarchy. It's September 25th, 2009. Like I said, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the sites and show. Coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and thanks to zeropointradio.com. Also blasting out on 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming. It's 11 a.m. Mountain Time there. The worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, blasting it out 1 p.m. Eastern Time, all live, all simulcast, and also thanks to my other list of affiliates, like Free Radio Olympia, 98.5 in Olympia, Washington, frolympia.org, rebroadcasting the show Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 93.9 boulderfreeradio.com, KBFR in Boulder, Colorado, and 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and 104.1 in Berkeley, California, berkeleyliberationradio.net. And of course, thanks to my man Glenn here in Portland. and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. You can get in touch with me any number of ways. FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, IM, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Want to throw out a couple bit of thanks to my man Dave in the UK for sending me some CDs and a book. You may recall playing the Janet Street Preachers. That was one of Dave's bands. We played a track several months ago. So big thanks to him. And of course, I wholeheartedly encourage people sending me media. I believe I will probably set up a P.O. box here very soon. That'll be an easy way, and you guys can send me stuff. Also want to thank Karen in Ontario for getting in touch with me. She's been listening to the show for a while, but she wanted to chime in regards to my question I've posted recently about whether or not I should clean up the show in order to hopefully pick up some more affiliates that could play the show on FM and not worrying about effing the CC. Karen in Ontario says, don't change a thing. And I don't think I'm ready to change a thing. Nor do I think if I decided to, there would be any kind of grand announcement saying, from here on out, I won't say fuck. See, there you go. However, if someone wanted to take on the mission of making a clean edit every week, I certainly wouldn't dissuade that. And no, one last note in regards to clean or explicit. James Corbett of CorbettReport.com said, well, you just got to think, what would Christian Slater do? That, of course, being a Pump Up the Volume reference. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said, it's episode 142 of Media Monarchy. It's now autumn, and this will be the last episode in September 2009 of MediaMonarchy.com as we're coming up on our third anniversary of the radio show, and we just passed the fourth anniversary of the website, MediaMonarchy.com. However, we're going to kick it off, leading off from Whitey on the Moon. There's also water on the moon. Scientists confirm water on the moon. This is up on cyberspacewar.com by way of the Register out of the UK. Analysis of the lunar surface by three different spacecrafts have provided quote-unquote unambiguous evidence of water on the moon.
One small step for man, one
ever since man first landed on the moon, one big question has been, could man live on the moon? It appears a giant step has been taken in finding out an answer. Three different space probes have found molecules of water just under the lunar surface. India's first moon probe was one of those to make the discovery. G. Madhavan Nair chairs the country's space research organization.
To conclude that there is water, a lot of analysis has to be done. Our mineralogical mapper and the terrain mapping instrument and the synthetic aperture radar, all these instruments have collected data. The analysis is progressing.
It's an exciting discovery, and those with vivid imaginations may already be thinking about settlements on the moon and saving up for the airfares to get there. But it's fair to say we're far from seeing a Center Parcs or Butlins springing up. Although excited by the discovery, experts are trying to stay grounded. Dr. Katie Joy is a lunar scientist.
Chandrayaan is their first mission to the moon, in fact their first planetary science mission. And they're hoping to follow it up by a series of missions, landing missions. In 2012, Chandrayaan 2 is supposed to reputedly to send a rover or a lander to the surface. And then hopefully this should inspire a renewed interest in lunar exploration from India, China, Japan and so on and so forth.
This water on the moon found is not lakes, oceans or even puddles. But there is a lot of the moon yet to be investigated, which may be wetter. Scientists say that could be the case closer to the poles. One thing that can be certain is that the idea that the moon is dry has now been disproved. NASA may uncover more hidden secrets when it crashes a satellite onto the moon next month.
Which would, of course, be their blow up the moon mission. You may have heard about it. We, of course, covered it on the show. I've even seen some people out pamphleting and doing table work. Don'tblowupthemoon.com, I believe, was a website. Now, there's more in that article and links that I put in that you can just go to Wikipedia and NASA and learn more about all that kind of stuff. The related interesting update, however, from the Associated Press, spacecraft spies frozen water in Martian craters. So there's moon on, or rather there's water on the moon and water on Mars. But like Bill Hicks said, back here on Earth, we're still trying to figure out this whole food air thing. The last posting that we're going to hit on cyberspacewar.com, I believe, asking the musical question, who wants to work at CyberCom? That's right, where you too can help fight the net like it's an enemy weapon system and engage the public in psychological warfare designed to manipulate public opinion. We have an actual job posting, HITN job spot. It's like healthcareitnews.com. If you want to do interesting and challenging work to make a contribution to national defense, DISA is a great place for you. That is the Defense Information Systems Agency. DISA provides secure and reliable communications and computing support that enable the president and our military forces to communicate globally through voice, video, and data transmission. DISA is a leader within the federal government in implementing people programs and offers a broad range of quality of life and training programs. For more information, go to DISA.mil. However, I don't recommend you go there. But just as we saw a couple of months ago, actual job postings for internment specialists that they're going to need when they decide to move the prawns, if you will. I recommend you read more about fighting the net like it's an enemy weapons systems or system, because those are the quotes from the Information Operations Roadmap. That's what the military has said, and that's what they're going to do. So who wants to work at CyberCom? Not me. Now, before we get back to the main site, MediaMonarchy.com, we're going to hit one posting on FoodWorldOrder.com. And again, I've had to set up different sites because everything is seemingly spiraling out of control and it needs its own website to just go over the food attacks and the cyber attacks. By way of the Washington Post, and this was posted up last Saturday, Secret Service locks down DC so that Michelle can shop organic. Let's say you're preparing dinner and you realize with dismay that you don't have any certified organic Tuscan kale. What to do? Here's how Michelle Obama handled that very predicament Thursday afternoon. So that would have been Thursday, September something. The Secret Service and the D.C. police brought in 36 vehicles and shut down 8th Street, Vermont Avenue, two lanes of I Street, and an entrance to the McPherson Square Metro Station. They swept the area in front of the Department of Veteran Affairs, where all those crazy vets are. They used bomb-sniffing dogs and installed magnetometers in the middle of the street, put up barricades to keep pedestrians out, and took positions with binoculars atop trucks. Though the produce stand was only a block or so from the White House, the First Lady hopped into her armored limousine and pulled into the market amidst the wails of sirens. Then, and only then, could Michelle Obama purchase her leafy greens. Now it's time to buy some food, she told several hundred people who came to watch. Let's shop. Cowbells were rung. Somebody put a lei of marigolds around Michelle's neck. The First Lady picked up a straw basket and headed for the farm at Sunnyside Tent, where she loaded up with organic Asian pears, cherry tomatoes, multicolored potatoes, free-range eggs, and yes, two bunches of certified organic Tuscan kale. She left the produce with an aide who paid the cashier as Michelle made her way back to the limousine. Gosh, there's nothing like the simple pleasures of a farm stand to return us to our agrarian roots. particularly when it involves a soundstage, an interpreter for the deaf, three TV satellite trucks, and closing part of downtown Washington, D.C. Carbon footprint that. So now we return to MediaMonarchy.com. Although I suppose we should glance, as we typically do, at the front page of Google News to see what's happening on this morning, September 25th, 2009. Western leaders warn Iran over nuclear site, and we're going to get to that, some supposed secret nuclear site. Oh my God, I'm afraid they have a nuclear site because they hate us for our freedoms and all that garbage. And of course, the G20 leaders declare their summit in Pittsburgh a huge success, where they deployed sound wave weapons and gas against protesters. But more on all that in just a little bit. However, Obamasiah, indefinite detentions and irreversible catastrophe. It's an ugly list of headlines. The first from Canada Free Press: the day a president became king of the world, Pittsburgh, PA, became the window of the new world when Obama completed the circle by stepping out from the dark shadows where he's been lurking since January 20th onto the world stage. It's where he met his destiny as king of the world. UK frantic over Obama talk, supposedly Barack disses Brown. That's by way of the BBC, and I think there's even an interview now where they've tried to downplay that they were frantic over whether or not there was some sort of dissing going on. However, more importantly, and this is one of the key things, is don't listen to what they say. Look at what they do. Obama will bypass Congress to detain suspects indefinitely. Obama quietly decided to bypass Congress and allow the indefinite detention of terrorist suspects without charge. The move, which was controversial when the idea was first floated in the Washington Post in May, has now sparked serious concern among civil liberties advocates. Such a decision allows the press to unilaterally hold combatants without habeas corpus, a legal term literally meaning you shall have the body, which forces prosecutors to charge a suspect with a crime to justify the suspect's detention. Obama's decision was buried on page A23 of the New York Times on Thursday. It didn't appear in the national edition because the front page had to be richest Russian's newest toy, an NBA team. That's some change, baby. Detain suspects indefinitely. And if you don't think that could mean you got another thing coming. So Obama addressed the big UN climate summit and warned of irreversible catastrophe. I can think of a lot of irreversible catastrophes. But paying a carbon tax to international banksters so that they can pay their carbon indulgences and be able to pollute as much as they want because they can pay it off. However, you're bad and it's your fault and you're dirty because you do whatever you do, whether it's kids or cars, and I'm no fan of either of those things, but again, if you really believe in anthropogenic, man-made climate change, you should be anti-war, because that whole thing runs on the terror juice. Obama sets stage for new world order. This from USA Today, and again, remember back in the day, New World Order, that was just a crazy thing that Kook said when they were talking about, things that don't exist, like black helicopters, even though we've documented them on the show, flying over Portland and Denver and New Orleans. Or the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Trilateral Commission, or the Bilderberg Group, all those crazy things that don't really exist, except we've completely documented that they do. The New World Order. So now it exists. And it's a good thing,
But if you don't like it, you're crazy, and it still doesn't exist. Obama pitched his health scare on the Sunday talk show Blitz. That's from the LA Times. But from the Times Online, the London Times, unleashing a race war on President Barack Obama. We have touched on this before. And I recently heard someone reference it, and I've used it before. And it's from, I believe, a Twilight Zone episode. It could be The Outer Limits, but it's the monsters are due on Mulberry Street. And that's essentially where the power goes out. And all the neighbors and everybody start to pick each other apart. And I think you're an alien, and I think you're shady, or you're an agent. How about that? And we all destroy each other. And at the end of the episode, they pan back and show the two actual aliens on the hillside saying, see, that's all you got to do is just turn off some of their toys and they'll destroy each other. So until we get a major cyber attack or an EMP or a punch in the Facebook and turn our toys off, they can also throw us all the little football issues. And not to say that race relations or abortion or gay rights aren't important, but it's those issues that ultimately the elites themselves couldn't care less about. They're happier when we're destroying each other. It makes the work easier for them. So remember that. Anytime you're hating on somebody or robbing and stealing your fellow man, the man sleeps better. On a good note, Obama refuses to stop torture investigations. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. And a swirl of stories around state secrets. From the Washington Post, Obama to set higher bar for keeping state secrets. So that's a good thing. And again, that's how all these things come out. That sounds like a good thing. He's not going to stop the torture investigations. That sounds like a good thing. He's going to set a higher bar for being able to claim state secrets on national security. However, in some certain cases, Obama still stands behind the state secrets. So if we jump to threat level, Dateline San Francisco, hours after the DOJ announced it would limit its use of the state secrets privilege in new cases, the Obama administration appeared before a federal judge and continued to invoke that defense in a closely watched spy case. The litigation at issue, now 5 years old, tests whether a sitting president may bypass Congress and adopt a warrantless surveillance program, as President Bush did in the wake of 9/11. Change. And a follow-up again from threat level, Obama issues limits on state secrets. However, a story that shouldn't surprise you at all by way of Reuters, Obama fundraiser in $2 million fraud. Hassan Memazee, M-E-M-A-Z-E-E, defrauded Bank of America, HSBC, and Citigroup. And he was, of course, a fundraiser for Obama, Hillary, and other Democrats. He's connected to a private equity firm and an Iranian-American Political Action Committee board member on one count of defrauding Citigroup's Citibank. Banksters and gangsters, the whole lot of them. So those are your latest Obama SIA updates, indefinite detentions, and irreversible catastrophe. So speaking of money and speaking of fraud, it's the latest Econo Crash headlines. 10 looming bankruptcies plus a little FDIC and unemployment, but first from Business Insider. 10 big companies teetering towards bankruptcy. A new report by Audit Integrity identifies some high-profile names that have the highest probability of declaring bankruptcy among publicly traded firms. I don't know if these are in order of danger or not, but number one is Hertz Rent-A-Car. When you have tons of debts financing your fleet of cars, failing and falling rental demand really hurts. Number two, Textron. What a rough time to be a selling business jets, to be selling business jets, rather. Number three, however, Sprint. They're bleeding customers and could lose as many as 4.4 million net postpaid subscribers this year alone. 4.5 million. Macy's. Does anybody even shop at department stores anymore? Mylan, that's M-Y-L-A-N, in a classic case of management empire building, Mylan overpaid big time when it bought Merck's generic business back in 07 and is now stuck with $5 billion of long-term debt as a result. Goodyear, demand for Goodyear tires has sunk, or gone flat, but don't bump, and the company is saddled with massive debt and pension obligations. CBS, weak advertising and falling license fees have sent CBS's earnings off a cliff in 09. Advanced Micro Devices. When will AMD actually make money again? The question is becoming more important by the day since it carries over $5 billion in long-term debt. Las Vegas Sands. Overexpanded, overlevered in the last few years and now has $10 billion worth of debt to deal with. And the number 10 on the list of big businesses teetering toward bankruptcy, Interpublic Group, one of the largest advertising and marketing companies in the world. IPG was slammed by the global recession. So that's a list of half places I've heard of and others that I have not. However, I don't think we would shed a tear for the loss of advertising and marketing companies. Again, it's always good to quote Bill Hicks, just kill yourself. In other econo crash news, FDIC to consider ways to replenish their deposit fund. U.S. bank regulators are considering tapping a line of credit with the U.S. Treasury Department and may explore other lesser-known options to replenish the dwindling fund that safeguards bank deposits. And why do they need to replenish their deposit fund? Because they're about to go bust. Because so far, and this is by last Friday, we always are a week behind on what we refer to as FDIC Friday. That's when the feds have been rolling in every week this year and shutting down banks. Last Friday, on the 18th, regulators seized two banks, one in Kentucky and one in Ohio, bringing the record failures to 94 for this year and counting. So we'll hit triple dig here pretty soon. California and Nevada reach record unemployment levels. That's from Bloomberg, as well as more from the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. Unemployment in California reaches 70-year high. ZeroHedge.com has an interesting article about Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan gobbling up media outlets. Now, it's a lot longer and a lot more involved than I can break down right here, but essentially, JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs are among radio stations' leading lenders. So we got JP Morgan Chase, General Electric, radio stations, Goldman Sachs, ION Media Networks, Black Diamond, Canyon, Trilogy, the FCC, they're all in bed together. So what do you think is going to start to come out of those media outlets? Well, it's probably going to be more about what we're going to hit right now. First from thenational.ae out of the Arab Emirates, new world currency order starts to unfold. And from this morning, by way of Reuters, new world economic order takes shape at G20. Again, throwing it in our face, it's a new world order, which of course isn't new at all. And there's very little order to it, because they're really into the chaos thing right now. And that's how they get their order. Which brings us to the disgustingly long list of headlines on the Police State International. The G20 crackdown and occupying us. Or occupying the U.S. military attacks U.S. citizens with sound weapons and tear gas at the G20 meeting. This from Paul Joseph Watson. And we also have Reuters updates and many other things in this article. National Guard, police, and other military units attacked American citizens with tear gas and deployed sound cannons in response to an unpermitted protest as bedlam hit the streets on the first day of the G20 in downtown Pittsburgh. There are a ton of videos coming out. I've collected up half a dozen of them. We are going to only listen to a few minutes by way of our good friends at CNN for a little Orwellian militarized police state at the G20 in Pittsburgh.
This is CNN breaking news.
All right, Brian Todd, our correspondent on the scene in Pittsburgh right now for the G20 summit. He's been covering the protesters, some of them anarchists. There are tons of police security authorities on the scene right now. This is what happened just moments ago to Brian as he was covering these demonstrations, these protests. We want to inform you that this videotape is unedited. It's raw. Watch this.
Well, the protest has shifted over several streets in Pittsburgh. The protesters going way off their planned route. Because of confrontations like this, the police have thrown some kind of tear gas or some kind of smoke bomb over there. They've got set up a barricade over here. This is what's been happening today on the street. The protesters have shifted
by order of the city of Pittsburgh.
We don't know exactly where they're going from here.
I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly.
They were
I order all of those assembled to immediately disperse. You must leave the immediate vicinity. If you remain in this immediate vicinity, you will be in violation of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code.
Okay.
Oh, no matter what your purpose is, you must leave. If you do not disperse, you may be arrested and or subject to other police action. Other police action may include actual physical removal, the use of riot control agents and or less lethal munitions, which could cause risk of injury to those who remain.
Esta
asamblea ha sido declarada. Of the City of Pittsburgh Chief Police, I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly. I order all those assembled to immediately disperse. You must leave the immediate vicinity. If you remain in this immediate vicinity, you will be...
Fuck it, Stuart, come on!
G20 protesters in Pittsburgh hit with OC vapor and smoke. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sector after curfew will be shot. The Post-Gazette out of Pittsburgh has an interesting article on the security nerve center established at a secret spot to deal with the G20. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the G20's top security officials unveiled their communications hub for the summit, a windowless room of 100 computers that links to electronic eyes and ears all over the Pittsburgh region. The Secret Service, overseeing security plans, asked their reporters not reveal the location of the multi-agency communications centers, or the MAC, only describing it as a spot outside of downtown Pittsburgh, but still within city limits. Who's inside? The FBI, the National Guard, the Coast Guard, State Police, Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Allegheny County Police, Allegheny County Sheriff's Office, and Pittsburgh Police. However, that's not all. New York Governor announced that New York National Guard were going to be sent in support for the G20 meeting. And if we go to LDNews.com, the Lebanon Daily News out of Lebanon, PA, more than 2,500 Pennsylvania National Guardsmen, including several from Lebanon County, are in Pittsburgh for the G20 summit. The last note concerning G20, and again, it's suspiciously not on the front of newspapers right now. From PittNews.com, a grassroots coalition concerned with world economic issues hosted a 2009 Freedom Conference at Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall. We're coming out here We are coming here out of fear of big government, said organizer Michael McMullen. We are a broad-based coalition of conservative groups seeking alternatives to the G20. McMullen said close to 450 tickets were sold for the event, but there were fewer than 100 people in attendance. Keynote speaker G. Edward Griffin compared the U.S. government to a genie granting the wishes of the American people. G. Edward Griffin, of course, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. Oh, they even cover it. Griffin wrote a book about the foundation and corruption of the Federal Reserve System. In his talk, he cited the Federal Reserve as the source of the economic crisis, an accusation which featured speaker Tom Woods supported. Tom Woods has also done some speaking engagements with Ron Paul, involved with Campaign for Liberty. So we have the G20, and we have the massive police state crackdown. And I can't help but wonder sometimes if this sort of protest paradigm is a dead paradigm. Discuss. Now, a march, just a peaceful march of solidarity, that's one thing, and it feels amazing. But protests that get infiltrated by people who won't show their faces, and we find out sometimes that they've been shepherded and funded, meant to go in, cause trouble, create a ruckus, recede into the crowd, thereby justifying the police state crackdown. If you really want to dig into it, and you know the legendary story of the Battle of Seattle, Delta Force paid off anarchists, trained them how to do it. Agent provocateurs. Why would you even put yourself into that situation? It's the same thing sometimes when you see, oh, the neo-Nazis are going to do a protest. Your gut reaction is, oh, let's go yell at those Nazis. Let's not have any of that. Then we find out, like we have in places like Florida and other places, that neo-Nazi groups are actually run by the cops or by the FBI. Just Google some variation of that neo-Nazi group run by the feds. It's fake. That's another false flag attack. So whether it's agent provocateurs, that's a false flag attack. Acting like you're someone other than you are to pull off an attack so you can blame your target, your real target. But I digress. So we have the G20 and all that going on. We hit some of the UN garbage going on. We'll have a little bit more. We'll have an interesting note from the UN General Assembly a few days ago. One of my latest videos up on YouTube that now actually has thousands of views in just a couple of days. But we'll get to that quite a bit later. We also have all the latest terror probes and busts that were supposed to be on, oh God, it was going to be on par with 9/11. Now, if you can show me any kind of case post 9/11, some big massive bust, whether it's the garbage about the liquid bombers or the shoe bombers or any of that crap, what cases haven't involved some kind of informant who was paying the group, who was supplying them with things, planting ideas, videotaping them, saying stupid things that they're going to blow up, or we're going to attack a whole army base, the Fort Dix 6. Remember that one? These are all garbage. They keep trying to wave the bloody shirt and scare you of the boogeyman. Just like we have the announcement of this secret nuclear plant in Iran. Does that scare you for a second? Even if it was real, even if they were trying to make a nuclear bomb and they were working on it really hard, they're still not half as scary as the Western elites, the financial oligarchs, the military, media, industrial complex. Terror probe puts U.S. mass transit systems on alert. That's from the Washington Post. Terror probe widens in U.S. from the L.A. Times. However, from Raw Story, they pointed it out quite well. Media hypes the terror plot, despite no one at the time actually having been charged with any kind of terror. But that did change, and all they've charged some people, and they were brown. Boogie boogie. But by way of WCBSTV.com, FBI terror alert. Police warned to patrol hotels, stadiums, and subways.
The effect the unraveling of the terror plot has had on those who use mass transit. Grand Central Terminal and Penn Station were possible targets. CBS 2's Deborah Garcia spoke to riders about feeling safe underground.
Police are not the only ones on alert. Commuters are also looking out for anything suspicious, but they aren't letting fear keep them from traveling. The message is loud and clear. If you see something suspicious, tell one of the many security officers you see walking around Penn Station. There and at Grand Central Terminal, New York National Guardsmen, some armed with M16s, kept a close watch on those getting onto and off of trains, while canines with Amtrak police sniffed for trouble.
They're always here, always, always, and they're very intense. So security seems really good here.
Norby Calder owns a pizza place in Penn Station and has noticed additional security in the past few days.
I see a lot more security. More like they're stopping people at both sides of the end of the station. They're checking bags. They're doing everything.
Since this recent terror threat was uncovered, places of mass transit have beefed up security. But the news that one of the alleged terrorists had cell phone video of Grand Central Terminal has some commuters nervous.
Oh my God, cell phone video. Well, we just better give up all our rights and have the military patrolling our streets. And this is the boiling frog analogy. Slowly turning up the heat, we're becoming more acclimated to seeing the military performing law enforcement duties on our streets. And they do that for PR. They'll do the DUI checkpoints and that kind of crap. But it's normalizing it. It's desensitizing you to seeing the military, which again goes against what was called posse comitatus. The military wasn't supposed to do law enforcement. But then, of course, we had the day that everything changed. And if the terrorists hit us because they hate our freedoms, it is an accurate statement. If you know who the terrorists are. U.S. indicts Denver man in bombing conspiracy. That's from the L.A. Times. And isn't it interesting that these big busts always seem to come out of the New World Order enclaves like Denver, which we've went over extensively, and their New World Airport and their possible underground bases and all the symbology and military occult connections. NYC terror plot suspect charged with conspiracy to detonate bombs. Afghan immigrant charged with conspiracy to use weapons of mass destruction. That's from the Washington Post. And in an unrelated story to the Denver and New York bus tying in with the mass transit paranoia, an Illinois man now has been charged in a plot to bomb federal offices this late last night. An Illinois man was ordered held on Thursday on charges he tried to blow up a federal building in the state capitol, a case unrelated to the New York terrorism plot. Michael Fenton, F-I-N-T-O-N, also known as Talib Islam, was arrested in Springfield, Illinois, and charged with attempted murder of federal officers or employees and trying to use a weapon of mass destruction, charges that carry a life sentence. At the halfway mark in this Police State International posting, we'd like to note, essentially, what we were just mentioning, that U.S. troops are now occupying America. Paul Joseph Watson breaks it down in a way that I just now couldn't. Under the pretext of helping local communities, short of police, in difficult economic times, as well as preparations for a potential swine flu pandemic, U.S. troops are now occupying America as the country sinks into a state of de facto martial law. Again, It won't be stormtroopers marching down the street. We declare martial law. It'll be the slow, incremental frog boil. We've been inundated with reports over the last few weeks of uniformed and uninformed soldiers and National Guardsmen running internal checkpoints all over the country as a frightening sort of Red Dawn scenario unfolds, not with a bang, but with a whimper. The military are now being called upon to undertake roles normally designed to police, as Americans are incrementally acclimated to accept the presence of troops on the streets as an everyday occurrence. There's a video of a case recently in Kingman, Arizona, where National Guardsmen were filmed providing security and directing traffic. There's a YouTube video for that. Another similar example occurred in Newport, Kentucky earlier this month when military checkpoints suddenly appeared downtown on September 6th. Military police from the U.S. Army National, I believe that is probably National Guard, as well as Marines were purportedly conducting traffic control because the city was strapped for funds and didn't have enough police to do the job. Because again, we're all such babies and idiots, we don't even know how to drive and we have to have the military help direct traffic for us. The excuse that troops are stepping in to help because there's a lack of police doesn't wash. Crime is down over the last 20 years. Fact. But there's around three times more police, and the state isn't calling out the National Guard. They're being put on the streets as a result of the harmonization of police and military, a process that has been ongoing for decades, long before the engineered new financial world order recession hit. Troops also have guns, and their primary function is to search people and vehicles, not direct stupid traffic. Members of We Are Change Ohio interviewed some of the troops when asked if they would be prepared to confiscate guns, shoot resistors in the back of the head, or throw people into ovens to incinerate bodies. They refused to categorically deny that they would follow such orders. That's another clip from We Are Change Ohio. However, this was by no means the first time that troops have been used to fulfill roles normally ascribed to police in Kentucky. We went over earlier in the year, May 2nd to be precise, the military at the Kentucky Derby. We also have all the troops coming back to help NORTHCOM occupy the United States. Army was dispatched to patrol the streets of Sampson, Alabama after a murder spree that was in March. We've got the MIAC reports of homegrown errorism and on and on and on. The list and the links and the videos and the documentation goes on that U.S. troops are now occupying the United States. There. Missouri State Representative Dixon opposes closing MIAC. That is the Missouri Information Analysis Center or some such police state garbage. They, of course, put out the controversial report earlier in the year, falling in line with the ADL and SPLC, all about hate speech and homegrown errorism and white Al-Qaeda and right-wing extremism. But let's put it into perspective. Thankfully, by way of Huffington Post, who, of course, even though their foundation-funded elite namesake says that she despises 9/11 truthers and all that kind of left gatekeeping garbage, only 3 out of 763 Patriot Act sneak and peek requests in fiscal year 2008 involved terror. So again, as we've been telling you for many, many years now, they set all this up and say, oh, well, we're only listening to the terrorist phone calls. Oh, the Patriot Act isn't for you. It's all for you. The long-range acoustical devices, as you heard in that CNN clip a few minutes ago from Pittsburgh G20, those were used in Iraq. Now they're using them in Pittsburgh. They used them last week at a town hall in San Diego. It's meant for you. You ain't part of the club, as Carlin said. An interesting story from Cryptagon going into something called the American Police Force. Again, a part of the prison industrial complex. We mentioned last week or the week before one of the upcoming drills. This one's called Panamax 2009, and this is by way of Navy.mil. Pandemic Outbreak Exercise, Panamax 2009. Fort Knox tests their metal during a mock attack. That's from the newsenterprise.com. Military to conduct air assault training into Troy, Tennessee. That's from ClarksvilleOnline.com. Marines in Kentucky doing urban exercises in advance of their own deployment to the whatever meat grinder Afghanistan surge those poor bastards are going to. Newly declassified files detail massive FBI data mining project. That is from Threat Level. UK billboards equipped with license plate spy cameras. That's from thetruthaboutcars.com. Law shielding cops faces a court challenge. Again from Threat Level. And a funny note. Spy cam catches the cops playing with a Wii during their drug raid.
In March, Vogue drug investigators raided the Perkle Road home of 43-year-old Michael DeFalco near Lakeland. DeFalco has an extensive arrest record. He's done time in state prison for trafficking drugs. On this day, members of a multi-department task force claim they discovered drugs, weapons, and stolen property. A security camera they missed showed detectives also discovered a fun video game play, Wii Bowling. And over the course of the next 9 hours, game on. And here we go. Who's the man? That's right. Now he sets up for the spare. Ooh! This detective bowled frame after frame after frame. Practice makes perfect. And while another female detective lifted a couch looking for drugs, this guy focused on pin action. Now you might be under the impression police work can get pretty exciting. Well, it can. Polk Sheriff Grady Judd calls the display embarrassing.
Now, that's a silly little video about something that's serious. And again, it reminds me of a conversation I was having last night and talking about the dead paradigm of protesting. Is that the cops and the protesters are some kind of symbiotic relationship that they both need each other. It's this sort of like tribal gang kind of mentality. Again, that doesn't ultimately solve anything. Do you think the Bilderberg Group and the Club of Rome, and the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Rockefellers, and the Rothschilds, and the Banksters International. You think they give a flying fuck if you throw a brick through a Starbucks window? Glancing at Google News again, we see breaking 32 minutes ago from the Associated Press, NYC terror attack was apparently set for 9/11. Of course, Dateline Denver, an Afghan immigrant wanted to carry out a massive New York City terror attack involving hydrogen peroxide bombs on commuter trains to coincide with the 8th anniversary of the day that changed everything. The day that our multi-trillion dollar defense systems all failed. The day that the laws of physics somehow failed. Somehow bin Laden covered up the crime scene, appointed a cover-up commission, got Christine Todd Whitman to tell people that the air was safe to breathe. It was amazing. But I digress. Again. The last couple notes here on the Police State International, the G20 crackdown, and occupying us. FBI looking for an anti-government perp in the death of a census worker.
Investigators are now saying that a U.S. census worker found hanged from a tree near Kentucky Cemetery had the word Fed scrawled on his chest. 51-year-old Bill Sparkman was a part-time census field worker and teacher. He was found September 12th in a remote patch of the Daniel Boone National Forest. The FBI is now investigating whether Sparkman was a victim of anti-government sentiment.
Specific details of the investigation are not being released at this time because it is an ongoing investigation.
Investigators have only told census workers that Sparkman appears to be the victim of an apparent homicide. Sparkman worked for the Census Bureau since 2003. Much of his recent work had been in Clay County. The Census Bureau has suspended door-to-door interviews in rural Clay County pending the outcome of the criminal investigation. Mike Brossia, The Associated Press.
If we move to Threat Level, online conspiracy theorists latch on to census GPS units. The hanging death of a Kentucky census worker is likely to raise tensions among counters in the 2010 census, who have already been the focus of emotionally charged online rhetoric this year because they use GPS. Internet conspiracy theories have grown in recent months over the fact that census workers are now equipped with GPS-enabled handheld computers that let them collect the geolocation of street addresses as they perform pre-census canvassing. It's an improvement on the paper maps the census has historically used for the same purpose. Quote, "The exact geographic location of each housing unit is critical to ensure that when we publish the census results for the entire country, broken down by various geographic areas ranging from states, counties, and cities to census blocks, we accurately represent the data for the area in question," so says the Census Bureau on census.gov. But that explanation doesn't wash with everyone. A post on the widely read Infowars.com in June warned, quote, "I will tell you plainly, the New World Order-controlled American military wants these global positioning system markers so they can launch Predator drone missile attacks, the aptly named Hellfire missiles, I might add, against a long list of undesirables here in CONUS, continental United States." Now, they, of course, point out the more ridiculous posting. And again, that's a comment on an article. They don't quote the article. They quote a goofball comment that says they're doing it so they can hit you with drones. Misdirection, straw man argument. You put up a phony fake argument and it's easy to knock down, and you say, see, that's their argument and it's easy to beat. The last I'll say about any of that is that I believe essentially the law says all you have to tell them, by law, is how many people live in your place. The last note comes from KSL.com. We have a couple different videos, no clips for you. I just saw this earlier this morning. A Utah representative refused a TSA shakedown. Chaffetz, out of Utah, out of Salt Lake City, Chaffetz, Utah's freshman congressman, yesterday defended a run-in with security at Salt Lake International Airport. Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz admitted he got frustrated and even used an obscenity, but he thinks airport security was out of line, not him. God, what are you, anti-American? You don't like to be x-rayed, naked, and put up on display? Even though you're a congressman? So that's the end of the Police State International posting, and I'm sure we will see much more disturbing things coming out of Pittsburgh in the G20 meeting, the Group of 20. But we're going to shift gears into the BioWars and swine flu updates. But before we do that, I may as well tell you right now that you're listening to episode 142 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. It's September 25th, 2009, and we're broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And again, thanks to the list of fine affiliates that help broadcast and rebroadcast the show: ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. A disturbing story. What we can essentially call another dead microbiologist from WLS-TV, an ABC affiliate out of Chicago. Chicago family seeks answers in scientist's death by plague. A University of Chicago researcher died after being exposed to a strain of bacteria that causes plague. And Malcolm Cassadaman's family wants answers. That's Cassadaban. Cassadaban. The Chicago Department of Public Health says there's no sign anyone else was exposed to the bacteria. The tragic irony is that Professor Cassidaban had been trying to develop a vaccine so that thousands of people around the world wouldn't die a painful, ugly death from a bacterial infection related to the plague. But it was just that bacterium that appears to have killed Malcolm Cassidaban.
A University of Chicago researcher dies after being exposed to a strain of bacteria that causes plague. And tonight, Malcolm Cassidaban's family wants answers. The Chicago Department of Public Health says there's no sign anyone else has been exposed to the bacteria.
ABC 7's Kevin Roy talked to the professor's family and joins us now with their story. Kevin.
Linda and Ron, the tragic irony here is that Professor Malcolm Cassidaban had been trying to develop a vaccine so that thousands of people around the world wouldn't die a painful, ugly death from a bacterial infection related to the plague. But it was that bacterium that appears to have killed him.
We really thought he was so strong. We didn't see this coming at all.
Not only did they not see it coming, but sisters Lee and Brooke Cassidaban say their father never knew what killed him.
It was just so much of a shock. Even the time that he was in the ER, from the moment he got accepted to the time he passed away, we had no idea. We didn't even get to say goodbye to him.
60-year-old Malcolm Cassidaban was a professor of molecular genetics at the University of Chicago for 30 years. For the past 8 years, his daughters say he'd been working with a strain of bacteria called Yersinia pestis, trying to develop a stronger vaccine for the plague, once the world's worst health scourge. The weakened strain he was using, however, isn't supposed to make healthy people sick. And that is the big mystery now for investigators with the Centers for Disease Control and the state and city public health departments.
Was it a change in the organism? Was there something about the person who was infected that made him uniquely susceptible? We don't really know the answers to that yet.
It was hurtful just because we remember our father was very healthy.
Brooke and Lee Cassidaban say they're not satisfied with the answers they've been given so far. How did their father, who had flu-like symptoms, enter the hospital a week ago Sunday morning and die 12 hours later with no one suspecting that it could be related to the plague? Lee is following in her father's footsteps, now attending MIT, his alma mater, and says it may be up to her to solve this.
I plan to go to the lab to read his papers and to read his notes, and I plan to go and just try to really understand exactly what he was trying to do.
Lee and Brooks, they've been told that their father is the first person in the Chicago area to die from this bacterium, an infection that is usually cured with antibiotics. They say they're not eager to file a lawsuit, but Ron and Linda, they are wondering now, is someone at the hospital or at the university should have been able to catch this before it was too late?
That's a mystery. All right, yeah. Thank you.
Now, my man, Zach, from here in Portland, made the comment over on F-Book, as you just heard them say, that Malcolm Cassidaban was the first person to die of this. Is that to mean there will be more? Google another dead microbiologist and you'll find postings on places like Democratic Underground and Rigorous Institution. There's a long, disturbing list of folks who work in biolabs who have dropped dead. And I can't help but be reminded of, I reference it many times, Goodfellas, that even after they've pulled off the big Lufthansa heist and the heat starts to get a little too hot, they start to whack their own guys. Because they know too much. Last thing I'll mention is that my man Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com left a little comment at the bottom of this posting thanking me for shedding some light on this story of the latest death of a microbiologist. This leads us into the latest BioWars and swine flu updates, planning the pandemic. We've got a list of headlines, but first let's set the table with a question from Paul Joseph Watson. Will Americans obey government orders during a swine flu pandemic? Local authorities are keen to know whether American citizens will obey the government in the event of an H1N1 pandemic and take the swine flu vaccine, of course, amidst growing fears of quarantines and forced injections that have been circulating in recent weeks. Every sign points to the fact that health authorities are preparing mass vaccination programs and quarantines that could be instituted should the H1N1 virus make a deadlier comeback, which has been all but guaranteed by U.S. health authorities as well as the World Health Organization. Part of those preps include gauging the potential reaction of Americans to unpopular orders dictated by an increasingly distrusted government. How many citizens will follow orders to stay indoors, evacuate, or take a shot? Some of those questions form part of a survey being conducted by the University of Virginia's Health Department targeting everyone except federal government agencies and their employees, who are not qualified respondents for the survey target population, according to an advisory sent with the survey, which we, of course, all have linked up for you. The survey was forwarded to the InfoWars team by a reader who is part of a CEO-only networking group called Mindshare in the Washington, D.C. I could only find some other organization called Mindshare. I couldn't find any info about this CEO-only networking group called Mindshare. I was sent the survey below that is probing folks in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. on what they would do in a pandemic or anthrax situation, writes Etienne de la Beauté. They appear to be trying to determine if folks will comply with government directives in either a flu pandemic or anthrax attack. The survey, entitled Community Shielding Shared Spectrum, was issued by the Critical Incident Analysis Group at the University of Virginia. And again, it's all linked up. You can read the survey, post it up by way of surveymonkey.com, and more on CIAG on healthsystem.virginia.edu. Will Americans obey government orders during a swine flu pandemic? However, in other BioWars news, pandemic flu vaccine production to fall short. That's from the Washington Times. And disturbingly, but we've already covered many reports of mass graves and even mortician unions prepping for possible large body counts. By way of CTV.ca, Canada prepares for an H1N1 pandemic with body bags.
The specter of death from swine flu has become part of Canada's readiness plan. In a stunning development, Health Canada shipped body bags to at least two First Nations communities in Manitoba. The leaders there are shocked by the decision and offended on more than one level. The CBC's Lindsay Duncombe reports from Winnipeg.
For months, chiefs from northern Manitoba have been waiting for supplies from Health Canada to help fight the swine flu. They didn't ask for these.
We feel rejected. We're abandoned as an isolated community.
The chief says body bags, 30 of them, were delivered to Wasegamac, possibly along with antivirals and hand sanitizer. At least two communities in northern Manitoba received body bag shipments, Wasegamec and God's River First Nation. Chiefs in other remote communities hit hard by swine flu in the spring are now going to their nursing stations to see if their communities received body bags. The grand chief of the area says it's culturally insensitive.
When you prepare death, obviously you're inviting death to come to your community. Because we do not ever prepare for such matters.
This is just the latest in a series of conflicts between Manitoba's remote First Nations and Health Canada over swine flu. Chief Harper came to Winnipeg to stock up on hand sanitizer during the outbreak. It was later revealed the government delayed sending the product to First Nations because of its alcohol content and concern people would drink it.
Health Canada couldn't say how many communities received body bags, whether or not this is happening across the country, or if it's part of the pandemic plan. We asked the province of Manitoba if it happens to be stockpiling body bags for fears of swine flu deaths. It's not.
The federal health minister says the shipments are disturbing. She's ordered an immediate investigation.
This is a serious issue. It's very concerning to me, and once I know more of it, I will be able to provide you with information.
Both the NDP and the Liberals were quick to criticize.
But sending in body bags in the event of death is to say, look, we're not going to be able to help you, our hands are tied.
No one was at the Health Canada building in Winnipeg when Chief Jerry Knott got there to return the bags. He left them on the doorstep.
Return to sender.
Lindsay Duncombe, CBC News, Winnipeg.
Now, if we jump to globalresearch.ca, a massive new article from Michelle Chosadovsky, Planning the Pandemic, Body Bags, Mass Graves, and Quarantine Orders. just a little bit of selected evidence where he does go over the body bags in Canada that we just hit. Mass graves and increased mortuary capacity in the UK with charts and graphs and scans from actual documentation. We've got the CDC's quarantine stations by way of U.S. Homeland Security. Iowa and their facility quarantine order. Massachusetts and their $1,000 a day fines. Forced vaccinations in Massachusetts. You can check out the Massachusetts Senate bill, PDF form from mass.gov. And on and on and on. Planning the pandemic. One of the Native Americans in that clip just said, you may not have heard it, got a little garbled there, that when you plan for this kind of death, you're inviting this kind of death. By way of The Guardian, swine flu could kill millions, says leaked United Nations report. The swine flu pandemic could kill millions and cause anarchy in the world's poorest nations unless 900 million pounds, UK, can be raised from rich countries to pay for vaccines and antiviral medicines, says a UN report leaked to The Observer, which is connected to The Guardian. The disclosure will provoke concerns that health officials will not be able to stem the growth of the worldwide H1N1 pandemic in developing countries. If the virus takes hold in the poorest nations, millions could die and the economies of fragile countries could be destroyed. Health ministers around the globe were sent the warning on Thursday in a report on the costs of averting a humanitarian disaster in the next few months. State says forced injections and quarantines for a rapidly spreading germ, but not swine flu. Another fascinating and cutting article from Paul Joseph Watson. Health authorities in Massachusetts, have indicated that they will impose quarantines and mandatory vaccinations in the event of an H1N1 virus mutating into a lethal germ, but that forcible injections are not on the agenda for the swine flu outbreak as it stands. So whether it's swine flu or not, we got you. An interesting note from federaljack.com, pandemic charges filed with the FBI in New York City. Dr. Lynn Horowitz and some other folks have essentially sent an affidavit of evidence regarding the private global biotechnology trust that is behind this and most pandemics. Verichip shares jump after their H1N1 patent license win. That's from Reuters. From the Orlando Sentinel. A little sports note for you sports fans out there. What did the Florida Gators put up their nose to combat influenza? The Sentinel's Jeremy Fowler reported Sunday that UF football players received a nasal spray vaccine over the weekend for a seasonal flu virus. So what exactly did the number one Gators spray up their nose? Well, the CDC says the nasal spray flu vaccine is a vaccine made with live, weakened flu viruses that do not cause the flu. Of course not. China begins mass vaccinations for swine flu. That's from the AFP. Novartis microchip to help ensure bitter pills are swallowed. This from the Financial Times, FT.com, essentially one of the big mouthpieces of the elite. Your old grandparents who maybe have Alzheimer's or some dementia that we referred to on the previous episode, 141B. A microchip can be implanted to remind you when to take your pill. Daycare worker told she'll be fired for refusing mandatory flu shot. And then even more updates. Panel sees mounting bioterror risk. That's from govexec.com. Volunteers help out when first responders can't. That's from the SoharitaSun.com. And that, of course, details the fact that many folks in the public and private sector have essentially been deputized to be able to give you the shot. NationalPost.com shows that Canadians are willing to suspend liberties in a pandemic. They've got the poll numbers to prove it. Mom says swine flu contributed to her teen son's death. That's from WOAI.com. Hospitals make flu shots mandatory from KWQC.com. Nurses plan rally to protest mandatory swine flu shot. I believe that is in the UK, but back here in the States, mandatory swine flu shots for firefighters. Firefighters could be added to the list of those mandated to take the dangerous and untested H1N1 vaccine if Parkersburg Fire Department Chief Eric Chichester gets his way, while health workers in Ontario, Canada have been told they will not be forced to take the shot. Firefighters do not work in hospitals, but because they are trained EMTs, Chichester believes they should both get the seasonal and H1N1 vaccines. I plan on getting vaccinated as soon as it's available, he said. Our guys have the choice of getting the regular flu shot, but I'm looking into ways I can make it mandatory for them to receive the H1N1 vaccine, he told the News and Sentinel, newsandsentinel.com. BioWars and swine flu updates. They are planning the pandemic. Now, we referenced Sprint earlier on the list of 10 big companies teetering toward bankruptcy, but a nice little press release from Sprint.com. Sprint provides cell and GPS service to FEMA for their vehicle tracking program. This vehicle tracking program is officially called, if you'd like to Google it, and I've already supplied the link for you to run the search and find out more, Commercial Equipment Direct Assistant Program, CDAP. So, the press release from Sprint. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, a division of the Department of Homeland Security, is relying on Sprint to provide 2,000 Nextel handsets in support of FEMA's nationwide vehicle tracking system. As part of an agreement signed earlier this year, Sprint is providing handsets equipped with industry-leading Nextel Direct Connect and Telenav Track, a cell phone-based GPS navigation and tracking service. This powerful combo of technologies allows the agency to do its job effectively during an emergency by supporting quick deployment and effective management of its critical resources. The ability to set up anywhere and at any time is crucial for FEMA, especially when the agency is called upon to provide disaster support. Ha ha ha. Sprint offers the following hurricane preparedness tips, pandemic flu tips for businesses and consumers. To learn more, hit the link to watch a Sprint executive speaking about Sprint's pandemic planning and preparation tips for businesses and general consumers. Should we listen to Sprint for our pandemic flu planning tips? We know, of course, that organizations such as these, not to mention all of the telecom immunity and spying they're involved in with the NSA and the previous and current presidential puppets. These guys are a part of what's called critical infrastructure. And thanks to Matt Rothschild of The Progressive, he broke open the inside story on what is known as InfraGuard. And that is essentially deputizing those in the private sector, those connected with critical infrastructure, that they essentially have shoot-to-kill orders should the shit hit the fan. So here we have another case of the telecoms in bed with the state. Sprint providing cell and global positioning systems to FEMA for their vehicle tracking program. We first had an article from the Washington Times, and we'll flesh it out with a few other bits of headlines. Killer McChrystal warns more troops or mission failure in our Afghan surge, or the right war, if we like to quote Obama. General Stanley McChrystal, the top U.S. and NATO commander in Afghanistan, said in a confidential report that without additional forces, the war against insurgents there will end in failure. The Washington Post reported Monday. McChrystal's grim assessment of the war was published on the Post website, with some portions withheld at the government's request. Quote, although considerable effort and sacrifice have resulted in some progress, many indicators suggest the overall effort is deteriorating, McChrystal wrote in his summary. The report was sent to Defense Secretary Robert Gates in August and is now under review by Obama, who's trying to decide whether to send more U.S. troops to the Afghanisturge. The meat grinder. The right war. The place we were already amassing ships near pre-9/11. That's a documented fact. It's all about the pipelines and the terror juice, kids. More on this from the Washington Post. And you can read more about McChrystal on historycommons.org, running down his lowlights of recent months. So, was this a leaked report, quote-unquote? Of course, it's always interesting when leaked military and governmental reports go to the Washington Post, referred to by some as the CIA's favorite newspaper. So, are they leaking, supposedly, this as some kind of trial balloon? Probably. So, this segues into the list of ugly headlines. War whores. Spy surge, drones, dirigibles, and future wars. First up, another question from Global Research. What can Americans do to oppose the warfare state? This is an article by Sherwood Ross, who notes right at the top that Americans who voted for peace last November but are only getting more war are becoming increasingly disillusioned. The majority of Americans, polls show, would slash the military budget by over 30%, yet Obama has increased it by 4%. Change. That's some change. A majority of Americans want U.S. troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but the Pentagon will garrison 50,000 in the former country indefinitely and dispatch perhaps 20,000 more shortly to escalate the war in the latter. That being Afghanisurge. Since voting doesn't bring the desired change in national policies, people wonder what they can do individually. The answer is quite a lot. Breaks down the list of local organizations, which that's maybe essentially the thing to take home. Your home. Your community. That's what you can do. Be involved. Meet people. Talk. Spread information, spread ideas. You don't want the first time to meet your neighbors when suddenly nothing works. Military growing impatient with Obama on Afghanistan. That's from McClatchy. And it's those kind of interesting things that, again, to the well-meaning left would say, yeah, the military's getting impatient because all they want to do is kill. And Obama, he's so peaceful, you know, he's just jerking them around. CIA launching spy surge into Afghanistan. This by way of the Los Angeles Times. The CIA deploying teams of spies, analysts, and paramilitary operatives to Afghanistan, part of an intelligence surge that will make the agency stationed there among the largest in CIA history. When complete, the Cocaine Importation Agency, or the Criminals in Action, their presence in the country is expected to rival the size of its massive stations in Iraq and Vietnam at the height of those fantastic wars. Precise numbers are, of course, classified, but one U.S. official said the CIA already has nearly 700 employees in Afghanistan. I believe we're supposed to hear more from Killer McChrystal today on his troop boost. If we hit DODBuzz.com, the long-expected request for more troops from McChrystal will come within the next 2 days, that being right now. New Yorker goes more into reading the McChrystal report. Interesting times indeed. And the Air Force crashed an out-of-control drone in Afghanistan. That's by way of Escapist magazine. Danger Room goes into Bob Gates' supposed overhaul of the Pentagon. Again, Bob Gates was George W. Bush's head of the military. He's still Obama's head of the military. That should tell you something. Again, don't listen to what they say. Look at what they do. Science behind U.S. coercive interrogations missing in action. This from ArsTechnica.com, of course, essentially pointing out that the supposed science and proof behind torture is that it gets information, which, of course, it does not. U.S. to deploy optionally manned hover dirigible in 2011. That's from the Register. Army wants ideas on future wars. Again, from DODBuzz.com. You always got to have a new idea of what, you know, what new product you're going to roll out. We need some ideas on some future wars. What are some theaters of operation we haven't looked at? Discover Magazine goes into smart guns that read your DNA, which of course references the fantastic film District 9. Our fine friends in the private military contracting crews, Science Applications International, SAIC, they have moved their corporate headquarters to one of the main spookvilles on the East Coast. That's McLean, Virginia. Fleshing it out even further by way of Alex Constantine is the untold story of SAIC, Network Solutions, and the rise of the web. And that's War Horrors, Spy Surge, Drones, Dirigibles, and Future Wars. We just referenced District 9. There have been a lot of interesting films. Again, we sometimes note that isn't it fascinating that the news, which is supposed to tell us the truth, tells us a bunch of lies, and the movies, which are supposed to tell us stories and make-believe, actually tell a lot of truth. So we've covered many things in recent months, movies that have come out or are about to come out, such as Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island, which is essentially going to be about CIA, MKUltra, mind control. We hit Carriers, a poorly received pandemic virus horror teen flick. But coming soon, from John Ronson's book, his non-fiction book has been turned into a fiction film of the same name. And what is that name? The Men Who Stare at Goats. In this quirky, dark comedy inspired by a real-life story you'll hardly believe is actually true, astonishing revelations about a top-secret wing of the U.S. military comes to light when a reporter encounters an enigmatic special forces operator on a mind-boggling mission. Reporter Bob Wilton, played by Ewan McGregor, is in search of his next big story when he encounters Lynn Cassidy, George Clooney, a shadowy figure who claims to be a part of an experimental U.S. military unit. According to Cassidy, the New Earth Army is changing the way wars are fought. A legion of warrior monks with unparalleled psychic powers can read the enemy's thoughts, pass through solid walls, and even kill a goat simply by staring at it. Now, the program's founder, Bill Django, played by Jeff Bridges, has gone missing, and Cassidy's mission is to find him. Intrigued by his new acquaintance's far-fetched stories, Bob, our reporter, our hero, Ewan McGregor, impulsively decides to accompany him on the search. When the pair tracks Django to a clandestine training camp run by renegade psychic Larry Hooper, played by Kevin Spacey, Freemason, and Oscar winner, the reporter is trapped in the middle of a grudge match between the forces of Django's New Earth Army and Hooper's personal militia of super soldiers. In order to survive this wild adventure, Bob will have to outwit an enemy he never thought possible. The Men Who Stare at Goats was inspired by John Ronson's nonfiction bestseller of the same name, an eye-opening and often hilarious exploration of the government's attempts to harness paranormal abilities to combat its enemies.
My name is Bob Wilton. I'm a journalist. I've been investigating a story about a classified government program. So what you're saying is that you were a psychic spy?
a Jedi warrior.
I'd heard that the U.S. government was training psychic soldiers, and that Lynn Cassidy was the best of the best.
I've been reactivated. I'm on a mission.
I could come. Lynn's story was unbelievable, crazy, and completely true.
You have to dream a new America that no longer has an exploitative view of everyone. You will be a psychic weapon. Feel it, yeah! You must create warrior monks who can pass through walls and see into the future.
Congratulations, Scotty. Sorry it doesn't work out between you two.
What are you doing?
Cloud bursting. Keeps me in shape. And it's gone.
Jeez, you had like a whole desert to drive in, Lynn.
Please, please.
Thank you for picking us up.
How are we going to stop them? They've got guns.
We're Jedi. We don't fight with guns. We fight with our minds.
Holy.
I went looking for a story, and my friend Lynn brought me an adventure.
It's okay, we're Americans. We're here to help you.
What happened?
I think I just ran him over.
Oh, crap.
Lieutenant Colonel Django used funds from the project's black budget to procure prostitutes.
That's a lie.
And to get drugs for himself and his men.
That... Well, the hooker thing is definitely a lie.
I do find it fascinating that George Clooney, whenever he's involved in films that he has had something to do with the production or even directing, it always seems to have something to do with CIA, like Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And I'm sure there's others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But this is another example of a film that purports to give you a meal, but it's only some crumbs. Go to the source text if you want to actually find out more. And again, I'm not saying the movie should be more than it is. It is a movie. But don't take it for reality. These things are real, but it's being spun in a funny way. It's like the film The Good Shepherd, which I referenced many, many times. Conflating stories, mixing it all up, and you're thinking you're getting the real inside scoop into the CIA and Skull and Bones. A related update to this story on the men who stare at goats comes from Time magazine. However, and they make no reference to the film within the article. I thought for sure this would be a nice little tie-in, and then wouldn't be surprised if the movie had something to do with Warner Brothers and Warner and Time, and they write articles about movies that are coming out. Samurai Mind Training for American Modern Warriors. Samurai Mind Training. Now, posted last Saturday, this was in the lead up to all the great international conferences and conflagrations that we've seen in the past week. Posted last Saturday, the 19th of September 2009, by way of the Los Angeles Times, Obama to hold September 22nd talks with Israel and Palestine in New York. Palestinian and Israeli leaders have agreed to meet with Obama Tuesday in New York, a three-way encounter the administration has been trying for weeks to broker, the White House announced Saturday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas will meet Obama on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly session. White House Press Secretary and frontman liar Robert Gibbs said in a statement. And then each also get a one-on-one with Obama. So again, we have a three-way and then some one-on-one. It wasn't clear whether scheduling of the meetings portends a full-scale resumption of Middle East peace negotiations. White House officials had avoided setting preconditions for a three-way meeting, but did not want to hold one without some promise of progress. There was no sign of a breakthrough when Obama's Middle East envoy, George J. Mitchell, returned to the United States last Friday, again, the 18th. He returned to the U.S. after 6 days of talks. Mitchell's been trying for months to bring the two sides together. A key obstacle is growth of Jewish settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, territory the Palestinians want for a future state. But they didn't have a Balfour Declaration signed on September 11th, 1922, I believe. Setting the precedent, setting the ground for an Israeli state. The envoy failed to persuade Netanyahu to impose a settlement freeze or coax Abbas to restart peace talks without one. Saturday's White House statement said the meetings this week will continue the administration's efforts, quote, to lay the groundwork for the relaunch of negotiations and to create a positive context for those negotiations. There's more in there. Again, as always, thanks to historycommons.org. You can read more about Netanyahu and George Mitchell by way of Wikipedia, and there's more from Time Magazine and Politico and on and on. Interestingly enough, and this, of course, sets us up to jump to the latest geopolitical updates, ZBIG, United Nations, and Global Government. By way of ABC News... Fascinating. Zbigniew Brzezinski and the Grand Chessboard. Now, recall, Zbigniew Brzezinski was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. He is Barack Obama's one of his chief advisors. He, of course, also helped set up the Trilateral Commission, putting him in bed with folks like Poppy Bush. And again, these supposed ideological differences. He also wrote a book called The Grand Chessboard that you should probably check out. Zbigniew Brzezinski, and it all keeps spilling out. You know, his daughter acts like an impartial newsreader on the Microsoft General Electric Network, MSNBC. And he has two sons, and they're involved in governmental, private sector revolving doors. But what's the thing? What did he say? What's the big deal? Zbigniew Brzezinski says that the Obama administration should tell the U.S., or rather, should tell Israel that the U.S. will attack Israeli jets if they try to attack Iran. The National Security Advisor for former President Jimmy Carter, Zbigniew Brzezinski, gave an interview to thedailybeast.com in which he suggested Obama should make it clear to Israel that if they attempt to attack Iran's nuclear weapons sites, the U.S. Air Force will stop them. Quote, "We're not exactly impotent little babies. They have to fly over our airspace in Iraq. Are we just going to sit there and watch? We have to be serious about denying them that right. That means a denial where you aren't just saying it. If they fly over, you go up and confront them. They have the choice of turning back or not. No one wishes for this, but it could be a liberty in reverse." The USS Liberty was a U.S. Navy technical research ship that the Israeli Air Force mistakenly attacked during the Six-Day War in 1967. Mistakenly is a load of garbage. It's been well documented. It's a classic false flag operation. Israel hit the U.S. to try and blame it on Egypt. That was one of their big enemies at the time. But breaking it down further, by way of war in Iraq, that's iraq-war.ru, but posted up on the fantastic blacklistednews.com. The elites are at war. And again, this shines light on the idea that don't necessarily believe that it's just those 12 Illuminati bloodlines and they control everything and there's no moving any of it. It's not a perfect system. We kind of think of them as either multi-generational serial killers, as Richard Grove has said. You can also think of them as gangsters and gamblers and banksters who can sometimes buy their way up to the table. when you think of relatively new money with folks like Bill Gates. But of course, his dad was on the board of Planned Parenthood, of course, founded by Margaret Sanger, founder, progenitor of eugenics, given awards by Adolf Hitler. He wrote glowingly of her. That's the thing, the whole eugenics racial cleansing idea. Hitler and the Nazis didn't think of it. They learned it from the Western eugenicists like Margaret Sanger and all your favorite folks like the Huxleys and the Wedgwoods and the Galtons and the Darwins. In a shocking development with major geopolitical implications, former National Security Advisor and current man on point for the Western imperialists, Zbigniew Brzezinski, has publicly stated that the United States Air Force will confront any Israeli fighter jets flying over Iraq if Israel attempts to attack Iran. Liberty in reverse, he said. That's an incredible thing for Brzezinski to say. Israel in 1967 attacked the USS Liberty and claimed it was an accident. Pay close attention to how the Israeli media responds to this particular statement from Brzezinski. They say how all of the commissions found it was accidental or mistaken identity. Brzezinski has returned to the imperialist forefront after the establishment fully realized that the program of the neocon strategists was so disastrous. That's why the NIE in 07 reported that Iran did not have a nuclear weapons program, a direct result of Brzezinski's influence. This article goes on, and it's very important. Are the elites at war? Are they nervous? Are they seeing the sight of angry citizen pitchforks and torches in the internet community and 9/11 Truth and the peace movements? Coming up over the hillside. Is that causing mad elitist panic? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I'd like to think that it is. U.S. ships arrive ahead of joint missile defense drill in Israel. This from the Jerusalem Post. This drill is called Juniper Cobra. It's going to take place in October. And further info on that story and those military drills. The U.S., you know, they might leave behind some of their weapon systems in Israel after the drill. Is like, here you go, thanks. Because we don't give you billions enough every year and all kinds of weapons. The U.S. and France both walked out during Ahmadinejad's U.N. speech. That's from the Sydney Morning Herald. The Security Council adopted a nuclear weapons resolution where, again, all our world misleaders grandstand and act like they're not going to have nuclear weapons. They just want to decide who gets to have nuclear weapons. Global government got another facelift. You know, they've had folks like Angelina Jolie and Michael Douglas is part of the UN and the Council on Foreign Relations. So now supermodel Giselle. She's now a UNEP ambassador. So global government gets a nice little facelift. The Brazilian-born Giselle Bundchen will be one of the most recognized top models of all time. She was designated a Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations Environment Program. Let's see if she tries to push sterilization and vaccines to the third world to help the environment. Even though most studies show that if you'd actually let developing countries develop, their birth rates would stabilize anyway. But then they would be a threat to the grand chessboard. India to hold joint military exercise with China in 2010. Honduras's Manuel Zelaya sneaks back into the country. That's from the LA Times or from the Guardian. Honduran forces establish perimeter around Brazilian embassy. That's from the Guardian. We've also got from McClatchy. Deposed Honduran leader says mercenaries are out to kill him. And the last note on the recent Honduran coup, by way of the Miami Herald, they're torturing me, Honduras's Manuel Zelaya claims. What does he claim specifically? That Israeli mercenaries are using high-frequency radiation and toxic gases against him. You recall, just a month or so ago, we covered the recent Honduran coup that it was uncovered was pulled off in no small part by military guerrillas trained at what was formerly known as the School of Americas. It's the School of the Assassins, Fort Benning, Georgia. It's where we train third world Latin American military and gangsters to go out and overthrow countries that basically aren't paying up their part. The update on this geopolitics posting, ZBIG, United Nations and Global Government, is the update of, gasp, Iran has a secret nuke plant. Which again, if we glance at Google News right now, top of the page from Fox News, Iran nuclear site could pose a test to U.S. and Israel ties. They are still, of course, touting the New World Economic Order takes shape at G20 article, also on the top of Google News. So, the UN General Assembly, speaking there, in addition to, of course, Obama and Ahmadinejad speaking, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi used his long, somewhat rambling speech from loose-leaf pages of notes to call for an investigation into the assassinations of JFK and MLK.
Then you should also open the investigations of the file of assassinations, apart from the war files. Once a new, who killed Patrice Lumumba? Why? We just want to record it in our African annals and African history. We want to know how an African liberator, how an African leader, that he was killed, he was assassinated, who killed him. We even for our sons to read history, that our Patrice Lumumba, the leader, the hero of the struggle of Angola, the liberation struggle, that he was assassinated, that he was killed. We want to know the fact about that. Even after 50 years, maybe. This is one file, one dossier should be reopened again. And who killed the Secretary General of Hammersmith? Who bombed the airplane of this Secretary General in 62 or 61? How come that the airplane of the Security, that the General Assembly, of that the Secretary General of the United Nations, his airplane was bombed? And then the assassination or the killing of Kennedy in 63 or 62? The President of the United States of America, why? We want to know who killed him. Somebody who by the name of Lee Harvey, and then another Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey. Why did he kill him? Jack Ruby, an Israeli, killed Lee Harvey, who killed Kennedy. Why did this Israeli kill the killer of Kennedy? The killer of Jack Ruby, the killer of Kennedy, died ambiguously and mysteriously. We don't know before the trial. We have to open the files. The whole world should be. We read it that Kennedy wanted to investigate the files of the nuclear reactor of the Israeli Dimon, and then it is to do with the Security Council. It is to do with the peace and security of the world. And then we should open this file. Why? And then the killing of Martin Luther King. Black River. Who a human rights activist? It was his killing was a plot, and we should know why he was killed and who killed him. And then Khalid al-Wazir, Abu Jihad, the Palestinian, and he was attacked. He was in Tunisia, living peacefully there, and the independence of this country was not respected. We cannot keep it quiet. So even though submarines and ships came along the shores of Tunisia and he was killed there, and then no one is blamed and no one is judged for that. And then Abu Iyad also was killed, and we should know how he was killed. He was killed in ambiguous circumstances. Ferdan or the youth fountain. In this operation, Kamal Nasser is a boy, Kamal Adwan, and Abu Yusuf al-Najjar, three Palestinians were killed in a country that is sovereign, member states and security councils, member general assembly in Lebanon. They were living or sleeping peacefully. They were attacked and assassinated. We should know who killed them, and we should judge so that these violations of mankind should not be repeated.
I find it quite fascinating that Muammar Gaddafi used his return to the public stage to talk about the laundry list he just went through in that just a little 3.5 minute clip of his long rambling speech that is probably easier to deal with a transcript. But that he would use that opportunity to run down the list of all the mysterious assassinations both in the U.S. and around the world over the last several decades. So, that's a positive thing. Quickly, now, other good news. Neocon godfather and Trotskyite Irving Kristol, dead at the age of 89.
The man often called the father of neoconservatism has died. Irving Kristol was an author and columnist and magazine editor who described himself as an ex-liberal who'd been mugged by reality. His son Bill Kristol, also a well-known conservative editor and writer, said his father died of complications from lung cancer. Irving Kristol was 89 years old.
We've pretty much run out of time. I can't fully go into Irving Kristol. And he was, of course, a follower of the Russian communist Leon Trotsky. While Irving Kristol was going to college in New York in the 30s, he then became a lefty. He then became a neocon. Again, these guys lick their finger and see which way the winds are going to blow. For the best breakdown that's easy to handle, comes from part one of Adam Curtis's three-part documentary, The Power of Nightmares. The first installment is called Baby, It's Cold Outside, and it goes into what essentially is the shadows cast on the wall by all these supposed international terrorists. Power of Nightmares breaks down where the ideologies come from and who pushes them and why. Power of Nightmares. Lastly, on this 142nd episode of MediaMonarchy.com, futurist Alvin Toffler discusses third wave, that is, post-industrial life. More fine work from RussiaToday.com. Celebrated futurist Alvin Toffler has forecasted death and bankruptcy to the existing organizational institutes. It's about an 11-minute clip. Let's just get a little bit where futurist and author Alvin Toffler elaborates on this and other predictions on where society is heading.
You talk about transition, that we're going to be transiting from industrialized era to a super-industrialized era.
Well, I wouldn't call it super-industrial. We call it a third wave.
Third wave. Yeah. What are the principal differences between
these
two eras?
That an industrialized country or community, we all know what that is. It involves repetitiveness in production and so forth and so on. And I believe that the third wave, which is now beginning to appear in more and more countries or aspects of countries, is one that is increasingly dependent on knowledge and technologies based on sophisticated knowledge, and that we should think about the future, as I say, not just as an extension of the present. Typically, people say it's more of the same. Whatever's happening now will just happen more. It'll be faster, it'll be slower, it'll be this or that. But that's a very simplistic way to think about the future. The future will have surprises in it. And it will have events that will alter the lifestyle of millions and millions of people. Because there'll be new opportunities, there'll be new foods, there'll be new mechanisms, there'll be new everything out there. And when you put some of those together, they begin to make possible all kinds of changes. And I believe that we are at the edge of moving beyond the industrial age, which was, in fact, one in which we saw continual repetition, into what we call third wave, which will be full of surprises for us.
Now, what will happen to the existing institutions in this kind of society?
Well, I think that the nature of our institutions is, in fact, a perfect example of what we call second wave or linear their operations. And I think this is going to lead to tremendous changes that companies and organizations that continue to try to function in a straight line from what they've been doing for the past 10, 20 years are going to die, or they will be bankrupted, and that we will find new kinds of organizational arrangements. We may have temporary units instead of having a fixed unit. We may have temporary units connected to foreign units or all kinds of other things. And the technologies themselves will require different levels of and types of education and experience.
Do you think technologists threaten humans as individuals?
People using technology may threaten people. The technologies themselves, I don't think, are necessarily have to be evil or that they threaten. An automobile threatens people with hitting them on a highway. But it's the driver who really matters. And I think the same thing is true here. It's not that the technologies, we may create technologies that are dangerous, that put out issue a poison to the community. That's possible. But that's not the technology. It's the people who made it that way.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was just a quick clip from Russia Today's interview with author and futurist Alvin Toffler. He's written books called The Third Wave. But he also has a book called Future Shock. And I remember quite well, early on in college, in the English building, I believe, you know, there are always, every now and then, boxes of random books and textbooks and things that you can grab for free. There was a beat-up paper book copy of Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. What I did not know in doing a little bit of research on that and just adding some of the supplemental links to flesh it out for you, there's a documentary from 1972 based on the book Future Shock by Alvin Toffler, and it's narrated by one of my artistic heroes, Orson Welles. Future Shock is a sickness that comes from too much change in too short a time. It's the feeling that nothing's permanent anymore. It's the reaction to changes that happen so fast we can't absorb them. It's the premature arrival of the future. And for those who are unprepared, its effects can be pretty devastating.
May I have your attention, please? Flight number 341 will be arriving at gate 7.
In the course of my work, which takes me to just about every corner of the globe, I see many aspects of a phenomenon which I'm just beginning to understand. Our modern technology has achieved a degree of sophistication beyond our wildest dreams, but this technology has exacted a pretty heavy price. We live in an age of anxiety, a time of stress, and with all our sophistication, we are, in fact, the victims of our own technological strength. We are the victims of shock, of future shock.
And so, yes, Orson Welles has the last word from the 1972 documentary that's actually available in its entirety up on YouTube. I posted up the playlist, Future Shock. And that's where we're going to leave it for episode 142 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 25th, 2009. A quick glance at a short list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. You know, if you put a little stat counter on your website that shows how many hits you get, it gives you the back-end login to see who's visiting your website. And when you traffic in the kind of information that MediaMonarchy.com does, you'll get visits like this. The United States Naval Academy out of Annapolis, Maryland. The USCourts.gov out of Washington, D.C. They Googled McChrystal failure. The U.S. General Accounting Office out of Upper Marlboro, Maryland. They Googled Ardent Century. The recent military terror drill we went over extensively on Media Monarchy. Nonetheless, was my interview with Clyde Lewis. The U.S. Army headquarters out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and finally the United States Postal Service out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Now, that's a short list, but interestingly enough, overall general traffic to the website has been up and up and up, slowly but surely. Again, thanks in no small part to my recent interview with Richard Grove. That's still available. It's up at the top of the page. Don't miss the interview with Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com. Again, we're planting seeds, we're giving you information, we're trying to empower you so you can make better decisions. My friends, if you like the show, please spread the word. Drop me a line. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, Tube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger. Any number of ways we can make contact and spread the word. This has been episode 142 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 25th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.